Stuart, great to see you. Mine's whatever overpriced continental lager this is. Ask BB for details. Ferg holds up a nearly drained pint glass. We're in the Head in Hand. Ferg, lanky, darkly foppish-haired, eyes glinting, is the same Bodie Ferguson of the golf course story. BB is Big Bairn, Nicol Dunn. I find him and find out who's drinking what. Ferg was my great rival at school for prizes, especially the English prize. He was pretty good at art, but I was better. Anyway, my best friend, for want of a better term, until I left in such a hurry and we lost touch. You're in London. Why wasn't I informed? I'm in London sometimes. So what is it you do again? I like buildings. You're a pyromaniac. Aha, be still, my aching sides. I smile as the girl comes over and I say, hi, take my phone out and read off the drinks order. Yes, Ferg says, you would have an iPhone, wouldn't you? Yes, I would. So, Stuart, you stick big lights round buildings and make sure they're pointing sort of generally towards it. That's your job. That's what you do. This is your career. Do you have a job, Ferg? Of course. I'm a wildly talented games designer. You've probably played some of the games I've designed. It's a good night. Lot of chat, crack, whatever, lot of laughing. Good to be with the old gang again. We visit several bars. Ferg, an equal opportunities predator, hits on three women and at least two guys. Exchange numbers and everything. We're walking between bars near the docks when I catch a whiff of something sharp, like chlorine or whatever it is they put in swimming pools, and I'm right back. The first time I definitely saw Ellie. Years and years ago. It was one of those hot, hazy summers from my teens. Her swimming costume was a one-piece, black. Her legs looked like they'd stretch into different time zones when she lay down, and her face was just this vision of blissed serenity. She saw me looking at her. She smiled. It seems crazy now. It seemed crazy then. You can't decide you've found your life's desire, your soul's soulmate, on the strength of a glance. We're in the house now. Slaves to tradition, Ferg and I are in a corner, sitting on those wobbly white plastic one-piece chairs you see in back gardens and down-market resorts throughout the world. One of the girls who's bopping glances up at me and smiles. It's lovely Haley, wee sister of Tiger Yunsen. Anyway, I thought we were getting on really well, me and Haley. That smile from the girl confirms it. Typical. And me meaning to stay pure and devoted to Ellie this weekend. So, how much does this floodlighting scam pay? Ferg asks. Back to reality. I clear my throat. A fair bit. Don't be coy with me. How much? 100 grand a year, I tell him. This is a lie. I stare at him. I so want to tell the bastard I've just been made partner, but it actually feels cooler not to, somehow. I look round the people on the decking. I recognise most of them. So many people doing the same things they were when I left, hanging out in the same places, saying the same things, having the same arguments. It feels comfortable, reassuring, just being able to step back into our old shared life so easily, but at the same time a bit terrifying. And a touch sad. Later, somebody's flat, not sure where. Navigation back to the Maw and Paws may be interesting. Taxi recommended. The beautiful Haley appears before me and seems to be trying to drag me to my feet to dance, but I just sit there, slumped and smiling and shaking my head while she tugs at my arms. But then I have had a lot to drink and some blow, and I vaguely recall knocking back a pill of some sort earlier. Haley thrusts my jacket into my hands and leans her lovely head right down to mine. Your taxi's here. Then she and Ferg are helping me up and putting me in the back of a taxi. At Mum and Dad's, I head upstairs to a room and bed still familiar even after 5 years away. Home. Saturday. She drove me to the station. That night. That warm night when it all went sour. When the world collapsed around me 5 years back. Is there anything I can say? Duck, she says urgently. Write down. You all right, hen? two male voices say almost at once, "Oh, Jesus, it's them. Her brothers. They're out looking for me. I could die here. I'm fine. I'm just driving. And you two? What? What are you doing?"
"Looking for that two-timing bastard."
"Go home," she tells them.
"No, you go home."
"I just want to drive around a bit, guys, okay? I'll be fine. Everything's cool." I'm thrown forward, then to the side, then back, all in a roar of engine and a brief screech of tyres. "Safe to surface," I hear her say, maybe half a minute later. I look at her in the darkness as we make another turn. My throat tries to close up. "I'm so sorry." At first I think she doesn't hear me. Then as we draw to a decorous, perfectly controlled stop by the station entrance, she glances at me and says, "I know. You could come with me." She shakes her head. "Just get out, Stuart." I stand for a bit in the warm night, listening to the breeze in the tallest branches of the nearby trees until I hear the rumble of a train, way in the distance, coming closer. It's barely noon as I stride out of our street and hit Glendrummy Road, heading east under the light, fresh, sun-struck haze. On the beach, with the sloped grey wall of the promenade to my left, I walk north under the grey-pink striations of the slowly dissipating fog. I walk keeping to the firmest sands, waving to one or two groups of people when they wave to me. I get to the start of the trees and then the Brochty Burn after about an hour and a quarter. We tried wading this stretch a few times when we were kids, because the next viable crossing was miles upstream. But glory be, now there's a bridge. "Now they put a bridge in," I mutter to myself, still grinning, then feel foolish and look round to make sure there's nobody around to overhear, which there isn't, of course. I look back the way I've come, along the restless sand. That first night I saw her by the light of a beach fire, a roaring pyre spindling the enveloping darkness, while the white waves rose and fell along the margin of the shore and the stars wheeled like frozen spray. She'd just waded out of the shallows, with a few others who'd been in for a midnight swim. I handed the jay back, coughing.
"What is this? Dried seagull shit?"
"Oh, shut up and wait for the pills to kick in," Ferg told me. It was the last summer we'd all be together. Between high school and the various gap years, universities, colleges and jobs we were all bound for, I kept looking over at Ellie. She was sitting with Josh McEvitt. They sat close on towels, her hair still glistening darkly. Ellie and Josh were sort of going out. She was supposed to be mine. I'd hardly talked to her, barely touched her. A handshake once, a brush of cheek against cheek at her birthday earlier that year, and a few formal hugs. Dear God, Ellie was beautiful. Firelight on a beach under the stars will improve pretty much anybody's looks, obviously, but even so, the girl was just startlingly beautiful. Eye-wideningly beautiful. Breath sucked out of you beautiful. I felt I was about to start moaning or something, if I hadn't inadvertently already, so I looked away. Ferg was lying, gazing at me, an odd expression on his face. He turned his head languorously, taking in the handsome huddle that was Josh and Ellie, then looked back at me. "Jealous?"
"Envious," I conceded.
"Have you ever thought you might be even slightly gay, Stuart?"
"Yeah, but no, definitely not."
"How do you know if you haven't tried?"
"Dude, I haven't tried chlamydia, but I don't want that either."
"Stuart, kiss me. I swear it'll lead to something better, or at least the chance of it. Take it."
"Okay, but no tongues."
"Of course tongues, you idiot,"
Ferg said, grasping me by the back of the neck and bringing our mouths together. I did sort of open, and there was some tongue action, but I was distracted. Ferg pulled away with a sigh.
"Your heart really isn't in it, is it, my love?"
"Neither's anything else," I said, wiping my mouth. "Sorry."
"Come on," Ferg called over to Josh, and they both rose. "It's a challenge."
"Where to?"
Josh asked.
"To wherever one of us can't run anymore and has to stop for breath."
Ellie was holding a white handkerchief. She let it go.
"Go,"
she said, and the guys raced off. It seemed like the obvious thing to do, so I sat down beside Ellie.
"Hey, Stuart," she said, making more room for me.
"I was just wondering when we'll see them again, Josh and Ferg." She looked to where the guys had disappeared. "Could be a while," she said, smiling. It was an odd smile. Maybe a little sad, wistful, something like that. Then she lay down on her side, one arm beneath her head. She stretched, yawned, cat-like, completely unself-conscious. "Do you want me to..." I nodded to one side. "Do I want you to what?" "Go. Do you want me to go?" "Why?" she murmured. "Do you have somewhere else you have to be?" I laughed quietly. "Not as such. Do you want to go?" "No." "Then don't." She flapped the blanket edge. "Come on. Getting cold." I did as I'd been told and cuddled into her, under the blanket, my back against her front. We woke up to a cool grey morning and to what were probably meant to be knowing smiles. "Sleep okay?"
"Never better," I lied.
Now, my cock was about the only bit of me that wasn't stiff. "About you and Josh," I said, after a few moments.
"What about me and Josh?"
"There's a party at Maddie Ferry's place tomorrow night."
"I know."
"You were going?"
"Yes."
"With Josh?"
"He was going to pick me up."
"Well, I wondered if I could take you. Could I pick you up instead?" She nodded thoughtfully.
"I suppose you could."
The first time Ellie and I actually had sex was mildly disastrous, more awkward than my very first time nearly 3 years earlier. She was tense and unsure, and it was neither a joyous romping bonkfest nor a sinuously graceful coupling of two bodies utterly meant for each other. "You still want to keep seeing me?" she asked over mugs of tea in bed, not looking me in the eyes. "Are you completely insane? I kind of fell in love with you 3 years ago. I've been dreaming, fantasizing about you ever since. I've wanted you forever, El. I'm just terrified you'll get bored with me."
"Now who's insane?"
At school, Ellie had got used to being top of the class in whatever subject she could be bothered to put any effort into, but she never really studied and consistently underperformed in exams. Nevertheless, she had finally pulled up her metaphorical socks and done pretty well in her last year. All the same, it had been a turbulent time for all concerned. Ellie had never really developed the skill of giving in gracefully. Even now, when she had Oxbridge-level grades, she'd settled for Aberdeen. As far as she was concerned, it had the best social scene. Meanwhile, I was going to become a great artist. I was going to take the artistic world by storm. Dad told me to get a grip. Mum said that all sounded fantastic, but Ellie listened to my dreams and told me there was probably not a single thing I couldn't do if I put my mind to it. Naturally, I heard what I wanted to hear. As you do.
Stone Mouth was written, was read rather, by David Tennant, and was a Heavy Entertainment production for BBC Radio 4. After the news, a dark